and welcome to Supergirl Gab, the podcast where we watch the CW Supergirl and then we talk about it. We are your hosts. I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And this week we watch Season 3, Episode 7, Wake Up, which is
a real appropriate title.
Because we are both very tired.
We got two sleepy podcast pals going on right now. Now, we have not really talked about the episode yet at all with each other, but I think this was actually a second week in a row where I kind of liked the episode. I felt like it was a pretty strong episode because it was a very different sort of format than what we were used to with most of these episodes, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Maybe not because of that, but I think I found myself going, feeling like I, for the most part, I enjoyed it. Even though I know we had the reintroduction or the reemergence of your least favorite character, I think.
So, all right. So I've said multiple times that the general concept of Monel as a person who starts off as very selfish and then grows doesn't bother me. It was mostly the execution of it. Yeah. And I do think in terms, and obviously like the actor can actually does have the chops to play like some genuine emotion. I just never thought that a lot of it was particularly earned. Especially with like how Kara became single right before she met him and that sort of thing.
Right.
But I did say last season towards the end that he didn't bother me as much because they gave him a little more complexity. And so like I will say that this episode surprised me in terms of how he was portrayed. That being said, I think, and maybe it's just because it's coming on the heels of an episode we both think is like one of the best of the season, and just we respond to really like energetically. Yeah. And so this one felt kind of like the energy fell flat for me.
Okay. I can see
and
that.
And also the fact, and you had said before we started recording that there were three storylines in this, and I completely forgot about a third of one. So, like, that, now, but also, this is one of the few times when I'm actually, I watch this episode a couple days before we're recording, whereas I've been trying to time it out so that I watch it just, like, an hour or two before we record, just so that's fresh in my mind. So some of it is that. Some of it is just the fact yeah. that, like, I'm kind of sleepy, and it's been a couple days. But also, I do think, but this gets to my main point, is that I feel like because there were three kind of plot lines in this, the A, B, and C, that it felt like all of them were kind of stretched thin.
Well, see, I thought it was more like that all of them, because usually in an episode, you know, usually on Supergirl, it's, and with a bunch of these shows, there's usually just basically like an A and a, you've got your main plot and then kind of like the B plot. And then I thought this one, it was kind of like they went, all right, we're trying to set some stuff up here, but we don't want to go too far with the plot on any of them because we know that coming up next is this yeah. big crossover thing. So we can't like jump the gun on anything and we can't have anything change too much because we know that the next episode, everything has to be kind of at the
ready,
status
yeah.
quo for the characters, for all the new, you know, the people who are going to be tuning in from some of the other shows just to watch the crossover episode. And so they were like, all right, well, instead of just having the two plots, we're going to have these three smaller plots make up an episode. And none of them sort of took up too much time. And they were all kind of light, but for some reason that worked for me. Like where I never got bored with any of them. I never felt like any of the plots were taking too long because they were all, you kind of were just kept checking in with each of them. And obviously we're starting off talking about the A plot, which is the yeah. return of Mon-El. They discover him in this spaceship that is buried underneath.
Which we've seen a couple times, I think.
Yeah, which
that's the one that we've.
I assumed, I think we assumed it was had something to do with Sam slash Rain, who is our B plot this episode. I don't know. Yeah, it just, I felt like it, I guess maybe just because it was like the setup was different enough. But also, I everything that happened this week was all kind of well done enough that it, like, that it worked for me. And it was odd that it was an episode where Supergirl really wasn't the focus. And normally I think that would, would irritate me.
I think my biggest thing is, because the B and C plots, I think, worked for me well enough. Mm-hmm. My biggest problem, I think, is honestly that where they ended the A plot, because I was really expecting, like, at least one more scene or, like, something else to happen. It was a weird place to cut. And I'm guessing it has to do with specifically whatever's going to happen next week, but it's also what it was just felt like a weird place to end the storyline this episode.
How did you envision it ending? Like, what was that extra beat that you were expecting?
I'm wondering if the reason why they came back has something to do with what the crossover is going to become in terms of these, like, extra worlds or whatever. That's what I'm assuming is, like, they went back in time specifically to save Kara's era because, spoilers for the thing that is definitely already done as we're recording. So you probably have already watched, unless you're like us and you're behind on everything, which we're hoping all of our listeners are.
Yeah, I feel like our to enjoy or partake in pile is like just tragically high, and we are so behind on everything as we scramble.
Luckily, there'll be a Christmas break, and then we'll be caught up.
Yeah,
which is going to be our saving grace. But but spoilers if you haven't seen like any of the ads or any of the news stuff for it, or you haven't watched the episodes. But like, there's a fascist Earth. And all of their doppelgangers for all of our different characters in the CW, and they're all going to be attacking our heroes. So my assumption is that the reason why Mon-El is back is specifically tied to saving saving them from that, or saving her time. For me, I thought that the cliffhanger was going to be literally Mon-El going, we're here to save the world. We're here to save your time.
See, I don't think that it's going to have, I don't think them coming back has anything to do with this, with the crossover.
If it's not with the crossover, then I'm assuming it's with Rain, but I still expected like that moment of like Mon-El explaining it. Because he kind of does to Win, but then it's never brought up again. And I feel like that would have
been
very
vague.
Bigger, yeah.
What he says to Win. And I think they kept his explanation off screen on purpose because they didn't want us thinking about what's going to happen beyond the crossover.
Okay, so I'm going to throw in like the big spoiler is that it is actually Mon-El. Because I think last week I had thought like, oh, it's not actually Mon-El. And they give you a good reason to think that it might be a shapeshifter that just sensed Kara's memories as before he came to view, you know? Yeah. Because he's acting kind of weird and different. But you find out it's because it's been like 7 years, I think.
Months to them, but it's been 7 years for him where he has been stuck in the 31st century with the Legion of Superheroes.
It was very fun for me to have to explain to Mike, like, oh yeah, he's been gone for 7 years. So he's been 7 years in the future. No. He's in the 31st century, but it's been 7 years to him, and now he's in the past. Just don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
They never actually mention the Legion of Superheroes, or they haven't yet, though. So I'm curious to see how far they're going to really go with that.
Was the ring that there was like in? Okay, I don't know if you saw this like this Easter egg, but in the Flash a couple seasons ago, the Flash and like the Speed Force sees, I think. So does the Legion have like rings, or am I thinking of?
Do they? They have the best rings ever.
Okay, because I'm pretty sure that was what they saw, or maybe it was. What was the one, like, the before the Justice League? What was the
Justice
one that, like,
Society of America?
Society. I still think it's the League, because I think there was an L. I think it was a ring with an L. So
yeah,
like,
that's the Legion ring.
Okay.
It's called a Legion Flight Ring, and they're awesome because I think they're basically, like, the coolest. I've talked about this before, but it's like, I think they're basically, like, the coolest sort of, you know, like fictional sci-fi thing. If you could get like one thing where it'd be like, this would be an awesome thing to have, you know, like a lightsaber or whatever. To me, they're like just one of the coolest, because it's just a ring you put on and then you can fly. And it sort of gives you like a low level in the comics and stuff anyway. It's like, who knows how they're going to do it here, but in the comics it's like you can fly with it. And
I thought you meant like the replicas. Like, I mean, I'm not expecting to buy a replica to fly, but like that'd be a good perk.
Yeah. You can fly, gives you like low level, sort of like a low level force field, like a little bit of protection. And protection from the elements of like being able, so you can like fly in space.
Okay.
It looks really cool.
Okay, so someone's going to correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure in The Flash, like one of the first times when he goes back in time for like one of the first times, he sees like, they say, like, you know, don't look too much into the Speed Force, but he still kind of looks. And so, like, there are a bunch of, like, hints they gave. So they gave, like, they had Caitlin as Killer Frost, like, a vision of her for the first time in an awful wig. It was amazing. I was like, what are you guys doing? That you couldn't, like, spring for, like, a better wig for her first reveal. Anyway, I think they had a few other hints of things to come. But one of them was that ring. And I was like, well, that's a ring. And then everybody else was like, ooh, I know what this is. It's a thing. And I'm like, that's great. I have no clue what you're talking about. So the context is nice. Anyway, so I'm assuming that they're going to bring that up at some point, since they've already kind of planted that pretty well in advance.
Yeah, but the ring that he has on is not a Legion ring.
Yeah. So, okay. So I'm going to get to like the very end of the episode, just because this is, I think, the core of my point in terms of what I feel is off about the episode. So he asks Wint for his help because he wants to go back to that ship, and he finds something, the ship is malfunctioning and they have to try to save the other people that he traveled with. And one of them, they basically have to rescue on the fly because her pod is malfunctioning. And the way Mon-El like holds her and caresses her, it is extremely clear that he is in some kind of romantic relationship with this person. And you think that Kara figures it out by the body language. And the way they talk later, she seems to be like, I don't know if she's the one that says that he clearly moved on, and he says, like, you know, I never forgot you, but I kept living my life. So I thought that, like, it was clear that it wasn't going to be a surprise that whoever it is, she's, like, whoever this woman is, it's someone that Mon-El is romantically connected to. So then the like surprise twist that it's his wife, and Kara's like super surprised, and that's where that storyline ended, felt really weak to me, because I was like, why is this a surprise?
Well, no, there, I think it is still a big surprise when you haven't, you know, you've got this person that you've been like basically mourning the loss of, and dealing with the worse than just mourning the loss of, but like that she's, I think uncertainty is the worst thing possible.
Oh,
much.
Absolutely. I'm like, not saying that. So to be clear, I'm not saying
there's
that,
just a big
like,
difference. There's just like a big difference between thinking like, oh, he's going out with her, to like, oh, they are married.
But she seemed even shocked when they kissed, when he kissed her.
Oh.
Like, it seemed like she was completely thrown back by this development. By the way, Mon-El, maybe just, like, hug your wife when you're in front of your ex-girlfriend who just found out you're not dead. Maybe, like, be slightly more tactful. I know that you're glad she's okay, but, like, just maybe don't, like, full-on make out with her.
Yeah, I would not lead an, oh my god, I'm so glad you're okay with, like, I would not go straight to, like,
kissing.
Yeah, straight to, like, just, I would not lunge at her open mouth first, you know, like, maybe there's less tact in the 31st century.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it is Mon-El. He's still a lot to learn. Yeah. But it is funny to me that, again, he's played, we talked about wanting him to have maturity, and it's like, oh, of course, he has maturity now, and now he and Karin never came back together. Like, this is, of course, this is how they're playing it out. Like, he's finally to the point where he's clearly grown up a lot, either by necessity or purely by, like, her influence and by, you know, learning from her. I think a little bit of both, probably. Yeah. But, you know, you see him and he's like, he's clearly a more mature, like, person who's learned a lot, and the way he presents himself, he's quieter and he's more, he's, I don't want to say reserved, but you can tell
he's so much more mature now because he's got a beard.
Yeah.
The ultimate signifier of maturity in former space dudes.
He did have a mustache, and they thought about CGI-ing it off, but then they were like, well, that would be stupid. Let's just have him have a beard.
That would be absolutely ridiculous. The big thing to me that irked me about the whole Mon-El plot, and maybe they're going somewhere with this, but it seems like I can't come up with a good reason in my mind for why he approached things the way he did, like, other than to just draw, you know, kind of drag out getting, you know, because that they have, he can't just immediately go, hey, all right, I've been gone for a long time. I know it hasn't seemed like long to you guys, but I've been gone for a really long time to me, and I'm married
now. I'm assuming time stream, they're going to just, like, that's how they're going to wave it off, like, I didn't want to affect the timeline, and so I didn't want to tell you, but then you kept telling me that it's been months, and you don't even know how long I've been waiting.
Nah, I don't buy that. Also, it's like, if he's like, hey, there's people in that ship, and they're gonna die if I don't get parts to fix this stuff. Like the DEO people, you know, Wynn and all of them wouldn't immediately go like, oh, okay, well, let's go figure out what you need. Let's go set, like, the sneaking around and, like, beating people up and trying to be all, you know,
like, suspicious.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's all just to serve the plot of making us go, oh, is it really him? What's going on? I mean, maybe there's some kind of thing that they're going to get at that's like, oh, that's why I couldn't tell you beyond just, oh, I didn't want to make things weird. But yeah. It seems very just plot contrivancy.
Truly the best part of that plot was when they're trying to find the ship. They're trying to locate the ship. And then Kara goes,
oh my gosh, oh, yes.
Stand back. Stand back. I saw Clark do this once. And then John going like, no, we're not going to destroy public property. We're not doing this.
This is way easier. There's a way to do this without destroying public property.
Because we got a little shout out on Twitter. An up-and-coming artist was nice enough to shout out that we often point out that young man is,
I think he's going places.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to say who it is, or are we just going to make it an inside joke for us?
It was Chris Somney. Who?
Hi, Chris. Thanks for listening to our podcast that I didn't realize you listened.
Thanks for making me super self-conscious about now I'm worried if I ever miss any of the Superman, tidbits, Easter eggs, I'm going to be And I feel like a real dunce about it.
I mean, I assume we just record these and they go out to the void and literally no one listens to them. whenever someone who is amazing, who this is like at least the third person where I'm like, oh, I really respect them. That's amazing that they're listening to our podcast.
Let's be fair. I think it's safe to say that everyone that listens to this show is pretty amazing.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's one of those things where it's like only amazing people are even able to hear it. It's like a
like a dog whistle. Yeah. Yeah.
Or much like in the first Superman movie when Lex Luthor does the thing at a frequency that only Superman and dogs can hear. That's very much how this show is. But it works for people that are just super cool. You don't have to have superpowers. Exactly. You just have to be great.
So anyway, now we absolutely have to make sure we find every single.
You will not believe how much more like rapt attention I was paying now. Like, oh, don't miss anything.
I mean, it's going to have to be you because my knowledge of the Superman movies is way less than yours.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Just by sheer number of views.
Yeah.
Of them. I'm not saying that was really the best part, but that was the part that made me the most entertained. Because I'm like, I don't even quite remember what that's a reference to, but I know that's a reference to the movies.
Yeah, it's so in the first Superman movie he does that. And she even does the thing where she tells everyone to just, like, stand back. And then she gets ready to do it. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's totally about to do that thing. And
I found it funny that they were just, like, walking down the street. I'm like, she's in, like, her full Supergirl gear. Okay. So,
I loved seeing them because you never see that, just them out in public and her just walking. Much less with like two seemingly regular people. I wanted, it would have been funny if there was like a little bit more of those, you know, onlookers just like, what is that Supergirl? What's going on?
So not to get away from the A plot, but I kind of want to talk about I'm calling it the B plot, because Sam's whole thing here is so dipped in like especially Superman lore in terms of like the way it was handled.
Oh yeah, it was totally like,
it felt not just so much the movies, but like so much of in terms of like points of her discovering what was going on felt so close to like to Clark.
Intentionally sort of like a subversion of or you know then towards you know when that twist happens with it, I mean even though we all know that's where it's going, but for the character at least it was very much a you know it's almost like a perversion of the Superman gets sent to
with a crappy mom instead of like the Kents, aka the best parents.
Yeah. Which I gotta say, I had like a little bit of issue with some of that stuff with the mom.
It was, you know, it's one of those things where like I could almost imagine it happening where it's a really complicated relationship and like parts of her clearly cares about her adopted daughter, but she's also like a terrible mother and makes like bad choices for reasons that she justifies in her head. I could almost believe it, even though it did get a little.
Oh, I was just talking about more like the fact that how the hell did she get that spaceship into that barn?
Oh, okay.
Like single mom by herself. Like
I thought you meant more like, you know, I'm kicking you out because you didn't need me anymore, even though you were a teenager and pregnant.
Yeah. Like, well, it definitely sounded like what she was trying to say. What they were trying to have her get at without actually having to come out and say it was that she had wanted her to get an abortion. It was like either you can't live here and keep this baby, and so she split and she was like, you think I didn't need support or whatever, and she was like, you just let me, and she's like, well, that's not what I wanted to happen, and then they just kind of changed the subject to like, what are you here for anyway?
I mean, I just kind of assumed adoption. Like, I assumed she was going to give her up, but that.
Oh, I guess that's
totally. I don't know. I don't know if the show would even, like, hint at an abortion, honestly.
Well, it just, to me, it seems like the thing that's, like, the would most drive that kind of wedged between two people.
Yeah, yeah. Like, now that we're going to get into, like, the moral standings of abortion in general, but yeah, just the idea of, like, the ultimatum of you need to do this or you can't live here, which is, like, which gets into, like, often, like, a different switch in bodily autonomy and, like, in respecting women's rights to choose one way or another. Anyway, sorry, let's not get into down that
road. That's like a whole other thing.
That is a whole other thing. But anyway, so, like, the mom is kind of, the adopted mom is kind of, again, she's not, like, purely awful.
No, I totally bought that relationship between the two of them, because I have known, you know, I have known people with parents who are like that and who do these things where it's like, it's, they're not making the right move, but you can tell that they're making the wrong move completely from what they feel like is they're trying, you know, they're trying to do the right thing. They think what they're doing is the, even though it seems really extreme, and it's not like I agree with it. It's not, you know, I certainly would, it's wrong, you know, it's the wrong approach, but you know that the people aren't doing it, like, maliciously. It's just like they have,
like, a wicked stepmother type of deal, but this, it's a very comp, it's,
I have no idea who that actress is, but you totally see she plays the emotion in that scene. Like, it plays all across her face, all through it, where she's like, this is, even talking about it is, you know, she obviously, that was not at all how she wanted things to go. And she regrets it, but she's also like, you know, what can I do now?
Yeah.
Other than show. Oh, really? And just the fact that she has this huge ass spaceship in this barn, which, of course, also thankfully she had a barn to put it in, but that it's just covered up with, like, a sheet, and it's been there since she was a kid. You know, they would have, it's not like they would have left it somewhere else for years and years. No one even just looked under this. And all the time she was growing up, she was never like, oh, or like when she's a teenager and, like, trying to sneak off to smoke cigarettes or do whatever and, like, into the barn. I just imagine her being a teenager sneaking into the barn to try to, like, things.
Yeah, I found out the actress's name. It's Betty Buckley, and she's apparently she is apparently prolific on Broadway, and she's been in a bunch of other, like, a bunch of movies. She's actually in Carrie as Miss Collins.
Oh, well, there you go.
There you go. But yeah, no, I thought she was really solid in terms of, like, walking that line between not okay, but also, like, not necessarily, like, sympathetic, if not,
yeah,
like,
yeah. She didn't
someone
seem,
you can empathize with.
She didn't seem, like, evil, or like you said, she didn't seem like wicked stepmother or something. It was like just someone who
misguided, maybe.
Yeah, and someone who clearly, it's like, oh, this situation got away from her.
Yeah, a little,
you know,
bit.
I mean? It's just it's like, you know, she thought, okay, I don't know what else to do. It's like one of those things where you have a reaction to something and you go, all right, this is how I've got to try to get this back on track. Yeah. And then you, once it's not gonna work, you still have to, like, stick to your guns. Or so you think. I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems like being a parent is really hard.
Yeah. So we can talk again. So there's this, like, parallel between kind of the classic especially Superman story, even though we saw this in Supergirl being super to an extent too, but, like, the pod and, like, in the reveal of the pod by the adopted parent and the crystal, which tends to be very important. And then her like,
I like
accidentally
that it's,
building
she's,
a
she's oh, following the thing. She's following the crystal, just like in Superman the movie. She's following the crystal. It's like she just knows she's got to go somewhere, but she doesn't even know where. And unlike with Superman, you know, he ends up at the North Pole, and she ends up out in the middle of the desert somewhere.
Yeah. And I think it says, like, Fortress of, it's not Solitude, but it's, like,
no,
Fortress
it's something
of
else. What did they say?
Solemnity? No, that wasn't it.
It was something else with an S, though. And I was just like, oh, I get it. They're doing a thing.
They're doing the thing. And like in for both Kara and for Clark, we have this hologram of someone who was like base more or less like the creator of, you know, of this orphan Kryptonian on Earth, and her being like surprised and be like, so my daughter was right. I'm a superhero. I was like, no, you're here to destroy everything. You're like, you're a destroyer of worlds, and you're going to judge everyone, and everyone's going to come up badly. And so you're going to cleanse the Earth. And then she's like, that doesn't sound like something I want to do at all. No, I'm not going to do that.
Well, it's just so heartbreaking when it's like, yeah. She had that scene with Ruby earlier where she was like, something is happening, but it's, you know, but everything is okay. It's a really good thing. And then it's like, oh, no, it's not. Yeah. This is all about to be. It's the Fortress of Sanctuary.
Sanctuary. We knew it was something like that. So I'm kind of, my only thing is that I'm a little torn because on one hand, I get the idea that they want to, you know, they've built up this like very relatable, very human character of Sam. And they don't want to necessarily, like, have her turn evil, so they have her basically be brainwashed by her creators. So that, and then
they've already wasted all this time making us like her.
Yeah, yeah. But, and I'm not sure if I can appreciate that and go like, well, that means that there's a much better chance of her being snapped out of it. Probably by her daughter. Let's be honest. It's going to be the power of love thing, clearly. You know, and like, and have her, you know, her willpower triumph over what she was created for. So that's probably going to happen. And I get it. But at the same time, you know, when we've had these like other complex or more complex villains in the past, having one where it's just she's being mind controlled essentially feels like a weaker setup. I don't know.
Yeah, and when you've sort of got someone who has no agency over what they're doing, it makes it a little less, I don't know, it's sort of like it compelling. Makes the stakes. Yeah, it makes their villainy, it makes the problem they present a little less compelling, I guess. Yeah. They're, I mean, unless you're looking at it like from the direction of, oh, this is someone that Supergirl is friends with, but she doesn't know that it's her, and so you've got sort of like, instead of the love triangle, you've got the like enemy friend triangle. Yeah. Of where also I kept thinking about though how and I hopefully everyone has seen the picture of what she's going to look like in the rain get up by now, but the big mask that it's got, that she's got on in it. It was just funny because I was thinking about like how if she just showed up as Rain without that mask thing going on, how obvious it would be to Kara and everybody. Yeah, that it was Sam.
Absolutely.
And yet we're supposed to not think that people would immediately put Kara and Supergirl together anyway.
Yeah, it's I was about to say, if not for that, then like Clark and Superman, like that whole thing.
I've just got to say, I don't know if you saw it, but like last week on Twitter, something came up and people were talking about Superman the movie, and somebody posted, and people were posting like a bunch of pictures of, you know, from the movie, and I pulled two pictures of Christopher Reeve as Clark and Superman, and just had them right next to each other. And it was like, these two guys really do not look alike.
I get it.
If that makes sense. Like, but in these two pictures. Yeah, no, I know. I mean, like, it's just, it really speaks to what a, I don't think that there is a ton of difference between Kara and Supergirl on this show.
No, I mean, she is.
But especially part of that is because we, as the viewer, we're constantly kind of presented with her as we see her. Because we know all the facets of her.
And that's true. Yeah.
We're rarely presented with her sort of as how like the outside world sees her. We're most of the time we're sort of seeing her behind this, like the after, we're seeing her after the big thing has happened, where she's like coming back and checking in with her sister and the DEO or whatever. And you know, it's not as focused on the actual, the whole focus is not on her doing the super things. It's more on the before and after, because it's a TV show. So it's more character based.
Yeah.
Because they've got to keep it going. They're not just trying to do 2 hours. They're trying to do 24 hours, season after season of that. I guess just it's like it really is a testament to how amazingly he pulled that, Christopher Reeve pulled that off of being like really seeming like two completely different people. And it's like, yeah, you get that. Yeah, you go like, oh, they share similarities, but it's just like I could totally buy. Even just in those two pictures going like, you would never think this was the same guy though. You would go like, oh, they kind of look alike, but
yeah.
Anyway, the episode is running short because we don't have that much to say about it. So I got to try to throw
So the last plot, unless you have anything else to say about Rain's stuff, I feel like it's mostly gotten set up for what's to come.
It was all of this just kind of felt like set up. You know, you've got the thing with Mon-El is basically just setting up the introduction of the however many of the Legion of Superheroes we're going to see. Then you've got the Rain stuff, which, and again, I'm saying this kind of dismissively, but I did, for the most part, you know, I kind of enjoyed it all. It all worked for me.
Yeah.
If not enjoyed it, I at least did not dislike it. Which,
yeah, that's fair.
Is often the case with some of the stuff on this show and shows like this. But then the C plot, which was my favorite plot, was Martian Manhunter and his dad, older Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, Carl Lumbly is back. I'm so excited.
And just the whole, when they, you know, when he's taking him around, he's telling him about, you know, chess and coffee, and then they're like getting an apartment together. It was all so brief, but all of the scenes were so great. I was just like, I would watch a whole show of, I was like, I want the spin, just like last week when I was like, I want the spinoff show of teenage Kara and Alex having teenage mystery adventures. I'm like, now I want the spinoff sitcom of my two Martian Manhunters living in an apartment in a city, in the big city, trying to like, you know, make a home of things and get back to, you know, trying to like, it just, all of the stuff with them was so adorable and so well done. I was like, I could watch this so easily every week. If the whole show was just the two of them being kind of awkward father and son trying to be normal in the big city after being such weirdos because they're from Mars.
So like the two things I like about this one, like, not only is Carl Lumbly back, but they're with them moving in together, it's implied that he's going to be at least a regular guest on the show. Because I really love seeing him get to be another Martian. And I love the actor and what he brings in terms of, like, his voice work to this mythos. I'm very excited about him just being involved with the show going forward. But the other thing I really like is, and it's something that I do think the show has tried to do since the first season, is let John grow and let him kind of, you know, so much of what they've set up for him at the beginning of the show was that he was living on Earth for like years and years and years and, you know, 100 or, you know, like what, 300 years?
They say 300 years in this episode, which I don't think they had ever... I don't remember them ever saying specifically before.
They might have stretched it at one point. I think, I don't know if they always keep that straight. But you know, this idea that he was really closed off until not that long ago, even when he met Clark, it was still very much like, or even after he met Dr. Danvers. Yeah. Dean Cain. Which is why I was like, wait, he didn't meet Superman in the jungle. Oh, right, he kind of did.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. But he's still very much learning how to be human. And I really like this little storyline because it continues on his growth as a character and learning to relearning to open up. And it was very sweet. And I really like these two actors working together, and I'm excited at them setting up the possibility of them continuing to do so in later episodes as filler is needed.
Right. Yeah. I'm 100% all for every week checking in with the little sitcom of the two of them trying to make a go of.
I don't know if we're going to get it every week. I don't want to get.
Oh yeah. I don't think we're going to get it every week, but I'm just saying I am totally fine with it. If they do,
if that happens.
Boy, do you remember how Jimmy Olsen was on this show?
He was on. He mentioned that he was happy Monell isn't dead.
Yeah. He did have that one scene, but I was just like, just thinking about that, I was like,
yeah.
Geez, really?
I'm always hoping that maybe in the second part of the season, now that once they close off some of these like storylines they set up in the first half, maybe they'll actually do some more focus. She's more important than Jimmy by any means, but also Wynn's girlfriend just disappeared. Yeah, we have not seen, and like to.
Well, I was going to say
their credit. We have not talked about. We have not brought her up yet.
Yeah,
because I didn't like. She was okay, but. I mostly like the actress because I knew the actress from other things, but like the actual character, clearly they had an idea of what they wanted to do in season two, and it didn't feel like killing her or breaking or having her like fully break up with Wynn. So she just kind of doesn't exist right now.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that Alex is like only in one scene this episode, and there's absolutely no Lena this episode. So I don't know. It must be interesting trying to keep a television production, juggling all those different things and trying to keep. And it's not like we have to check in with, I don't think we have to check in with everybody every week, but when you sort of get used to going like, oh, we're probably going to see these people all the time. And then all of a sudden somebody's not there or somebody's really.
Or is barely there. Yeah.
Barely there. It's like,
I will say, cause I don't want to get too much into what I've heard about how the crossover went, but I do know that Alex is in it a lot.
Oh, okay.
But I don't want to tell you anything else because we're going to be watching it probably pretty soon to catch up.
Yeah.
But I will say, unless do you have anything else? I think I'm good with this episode.
The episode worked for me.
It didn't work quite as well for me, but I wasn't mad at it.
Yeah, I totally get. I feel like I totally get all of your issues with it and agree, but just maybe I still have some like residual goodwill from last week, or it's just the combination of that and the fact that it was I never got sick of anything that was going on because everything was kind of like kept moving at such a pace that it was like, all right, we're doing this and then to this, and just kind of bouncing back and forth between those three plots, and just that it was a little bit different from how these episodes are usually structured. It all just kind of worked for me. And I'm so excited, I guess, when I don't like actively feel like it is a chore watching the episodes. Yeah.
So before we wrap up.
That sounds like kind of negative and
no.
I'm not.
Yeah, no, not trying no. To be. I feel like sometimes we're a little too generous with the show. So it's not always bad to be like, I liked it. But also I'm not like, you know, AAA+. That's okay. Yeah. So the other thing I want, because we do have a little extra time. The other thing is we both saw another DC property.
Oh, man, we can't talk about this now. We do not have nearly enough time. Because I would take like a whole episode to talk about this with you.
So I know. And I thought about this as you were even talking, because I was like, oh, man, this is going to take too long. Because, but you were adamant to me that I see this movie ASAP so you could talk to me about it.
Yeah.
So do you want to, like, in just a few minutes, just talk about the fact that we were both actually pretty okay with the Justice League movie?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, yeah, like, I I thought about going like, hey, let's just have a different, come be on one of the other shows. We'll just have some cross brand synergy of talking about the movie.
Which we can still do, by the way.
Can still totally do, but I think I said on the other episode that, like, before I saw the movie, that the big thing for me was I was just, I didn't want to feel like Superman was, like, really mistreated or, like, underserved, which was my big fear. I read some, you know, some, like, non-spoiler review or tweet or something about it that just, that had me scared that Superman was going to be really misused or, and all you have to do to get me on board is, like, don't mess Superman up. Treat Superman with some kind of, he's like, he's my main dude, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's why it was, like, so hard for me. Like, as much as I love Superman, it's like, do you know how hard you have to work to make me not like a movie that has Superman in it? Because I was like, even with all the things that the problems I had with it, I was still very much ready to make all kinds of apologies and excuses for Man of Steel. And then Batman vs. Superman, I was just, this is awful. For my sensibilities, if, like, I'm not trying to get into an argument with anybody. It's like, if you liked it, awesome. But for my sensibilities, for what I want from a Superman movie, it was a total miss for me. And, like, to the point where I was like, I don't even want to watch that again, which is unheard of to in my life up to that point. The idea that I wouldn't watch a Superman movie, like, a million times. I saw Man of Steel in the theater probably, like, four times in, like, the first week. So all of that said, the stuff with Superman in Justice League was great. So I was like, all right, yeah, you can, I will happily overlook a bunch of, and it has tons of problems.
Oh, it has tons. I will say right now, I did a Driving Home the Movie, which is my YouTube series. I did one on it right after, we got out of the theater. So, and that should be up sometime this week, probably around the same time this podcast goes up, probably. So we'll be around. But yeah, I kind of felt the same way. But to be fair, I also went into it because you had DM'd me a few, like, several days before I could go see it, saying I cried during this movie. And I had to ask, were they happy tears?
Yeah.
And then you said yes. And I went, oh.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I can go into this movie a little more optimistic. I wanted it to be good. You know what this was? And this is what I said on the video. I left this movie with what I had hoped I would feel from Batman vs. Superman, which is that it was kind of a mess, a lot of a mess at points, but I liked so many parts of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I could forgive, well, like, again, as a whole, how much it works, maybe not, but I could appreciate the parts of it that did work. And you're absolutely right. Superman is the best Superman they've had in this canon. Every interview I've seen with Henry Cavill where he talks about the character, it feels like they actually let him play the character this time, the exact way that he's always wanted to. He and Cyborg, like, they meet each other very late in the movie, and they have, like, a rapport right away that's really charming. And also just the fact that, like, he gets to say his, you know how Spider-Man has one-liners, but also Superman kind of has one-liners too, but they're more, like, classic superhero, like, aha, evil doer, you thought you could get away. It's not quite as stuffy, but there's still that, like, tone that he has with the villain that, honestly, like, him smiling, even when the CGI was super noticeable, him, like, smiling and laughing was making me smile. And that was a great thing to feel. And it's almost like you can, when Batman says, like, the world needs Superman and we need Clark, it's almost enough, like, Henry Cavill's acting in this is almost enough to make you forget that none of that makes sense for what we saw in the
other exactly. Movies. It's like you have to kind of pretend, like, that those other movies didn't exist and that
or didn't, like, happen the same way that they did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very much so. And I saw somebody say that they couldn't quite get past that because of how much the plot revolves around the stuff that did happen, like plot points.
I'm like, no, I'm happy to just erase that from my brain. Like,
My screening,
I know you didn't get to, like, and you know, you're always going to get sort of more of a charged audience when you're going to those like opening night screenings where it's just, you know, it's going to be for these big like nerd movies, you know, it's going to be packed, and you know, it's going to be packed full of people who have, who kind of already have an affinity or something invested in these characters, or at least in anyway. But the spoilers, hey, Superman comes back in the movie. Spoilers. I don't know if we should have.
Superman's dead. He never comes back.
That's right. That's right. No, but the part in the movie, and this is a little bit of a spoiler, even though it's not really, because of course Superman's going to show up to save the day at the end of the movie.
I mean, we literally just made, like, everybody's been making jokes about the mustache. They all know he's coming back.
Yeah, everybody knows that. But when he drops, you know, when he finally shows up at the end, and it's like, not only is he, well, for one, it's like, not only is it great when he shows up, but it's like, he also just shows up in there immediately. Everything is just like, it's, they're kind of like, they're relying on the audience's knowledge of what Superman is supposed to be like, to, and they're just kind of like, the way everyone treats him is just like, yeah, forget that other version of him that was in the other movies. This is just regular Superman. But when he showed up with that line, when the guys, you know, when Steppenwolf says something about truth, and he's like,
Oh, yeah. It's real good. And, yeah.
But he says that thing about truth and justice. It's like, people, and you just hear him say the first part of that line off screen, like you know he's behind the bad guy. Yeah. And then when it does that cut to him standing there and he says the part about justice before he just knocks the living bejesus out of the bad guy, people straight up cheered in my theater.
Yeah.
And it's like, you did not hear any cheering during Batman versus Superman.
No, the only time you did was when Wonder Woman showed up. That was the only time. And like, people were in awe. And I was like, well, Wonder Woman's going to be a great movie. It can't not be great. If this response is to like one scene.
Just the big difference to me was just that like, people respond well to the Superman that they, you know, it was like they were so afraid, like that they didn't even want to call him Superman. You know, they didn't want to call the movie Superman when they made Man of Steel, and they were just so worried about trying to make it seem this or that. And it's like, I kind of go back to this with the first Superman movie. There's like an interview with, I mean, and I'm sure there's multiple interviews where he's talking about this, but there's like this interview on the, you know, on the DVD special features where they're talking to Richard Donner about, you know, like what his take on Superman was, like what he thought had to happen. And, you know, when they were trying to work stuff out, and he was like, you know, there's just certain things that you don't mess with. And, you know, it's like Superman is just like such Americana, such quintessential Americana. It's like mom and apple pie, that it's just like, if you do him right, even if you think people like think he's square or whatever, it's like when you do that right, there's like something inside of us that recognizes it and goes, yay, hey, that's Superman. This is making me feel better that things are going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's like when that's the thing that this movie got, where it's like when Superman shows up, unlike in Batman versus Superman, where it's like Superman shows up and people are like, oh no, what's going to happen? You know, and this, it's like Superman shows up and everyone's like, oh, thank God. You know, it's like, oh, everything was really looking bad, but then he showed up and it's like, oh, it's all right, guys, it's going to be okay. That's the best thing about Superman is that it's like, that's where you have that S. If you want to say that S on his chest stands for hope, that's how you make that happen, is he shows up and no matter how red the sky is and how bleak things seem, he shows up and then you go like, oh, it's going to be okay.
I agree. So my hope is, I know that it's still performing okay, but it's clearly like under what like some of the other ones have been. I hope that what the takeaway isn't like, well, that didn't work. And because like, it's clearly there's so much course correction that I think needed to happen. And I'm hoping that they continue on this way because I feel like Superman was one of the better parts in the movie once they actually got the ball rolling on him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and people, just judging from, I've seen the movie twice in the theaters now, and it was at two very different screenings. You know, like one was opening night, you know, with jam-packed full of nerds and such, and then one was like a matinee the next week with just a normal, you know, sort of like a normal matinee crowd with like kids and old people and whatever. And like, you were just hearing people, there was like real genuine laughs from the jokes throughout the audience, and like people, you could feel, you could tell people were like enjoying themselves when the big superhero stuff was happening that you're supposed to go like, and it's not like I'm going to every movie has to be like, cause I loved Logan, you know? And that was like, super, that movie was mega depressing, but also great.
But not every superhero movie needs to be that.
Yeah, clearly. Exactly.
I mean, I literally wrote before Comics Alliance fired all of us. One of the last things I wrote was about comparing Logan and the Lego Batman movie, and how
both great.
They're both great, and they both have very specific takes on like on macho heroes that have been like really overused. And then looking at the way that like there's some interesting things if you compare both of those movies in terms of how it looks at toxic masculinity and then putting them in father positions and recognizing that toxic masculinity basically like just makes them suffer. But they do it in very different ways, obviously in very different tones. But my point at the end was like, if like the one thing I don't want is for Hollywood to see the success of Logan and go, oh, well, that's what they want from superhero movies. Cause clearly that doesn't work. Like, that's not the thing that people latched on to. If you just go with like, if you just think that it's a tone thing, then you're going to make really hollow movies. Yeah. What you need is like the right tone for the right movie, but have that kind of authentic message behind it.
But
no matter also, what the tone is.
Yeah, you've also got that thing, though, like with Logan, where that Logan would not have worked at all.
Without Laura.
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I was going to say, like, it wouldn't work if we hadn't watched Hugh Jackman be the Wolverine that we recognize for, like, 17 years first. It's like if the first X-Men movie had come out and then they were like, oh, Wolverine was really popular. Let's do an R-rated movie where he's an old man. And he's, you know, and it's like at the end of his cycle of, you know, being a hero, like if that had been the next movie that came out, people would have been like, ugh, what is this? No, it's like you have to earn doing like some kind of different, doing
like
something.
Like
avant-garde. Yeah.
Avant-garde.
Yeah. You have to earn that doing something kind of like artsy with it. Where you have to give people, and that was the thing that was missing from just jumping straight into having an old Batman in Batman versus Superman.
Absolutely, yeah.
Where it's like, what, huh? What? It's like, yeah, we know the audience is like sort of already familiar with, of course everyone is already familiar with Batman, but it's like, you have not given us any setup for this world to like kind of understand a Batman that is at this point. And it's just a really weird, I mean, obviously people, you know, people have gone on and on and on about that, about Batman versus Superman and like, but it just, it's really, it's like it, and it's also just, it's supposed to be a big deal when Superman and Batman are on screen together for the first time. But like when you've got a Superman that seems brand new and a Batman that seems way too about to be done with it. And then you're going, neither of these are sort of recognizable as the characters that I think of, and it's like that they're meeting each other at these, instead of being like, I don't know, I say I don't know, but actually I do know. It's just this is a much longer conversation.
Yeah.
So
which maybe we can have another time, but I wanted to bring it up because we both have seen it now.
If you're on the fence about Justice League, I would say definitely go check it out.
And I would say if you're on the fence and you listen to this podcast, You're already halfway there to like being like us and just wanting to see like good super stories. And this one, I feel like I said, it definitely has flaws. Go into it with those expectations. And I feel like the sum of its parts is better than the whole.
Absolutely.
Basically. And they're definitely, I mean, like, I don't know if I'm going to see it again in theaters, but I'm definitely up for rewatching it at some
point. I would
point.
Happily go see it again. I've not seen Batman versus Superman a second time.
Me neither.
I saw it in the theater that first time and I was like, that's plenty.
Yeah.
But I would happily go see this a third time.
I left the theater having the feeling that I was hoping to have with Batman versus Superman, where I was like, you know, for better or for worse, I could enjoy it. And that's kind of what I left. And I was like, you know what? If the rest of the movies take this, like, take what they did well and run with it, then I will be very happy going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So. My two big things were just, I was like, I want Superman to be treated well. And I was like, I don't want to dislike any of these characters when I leave the movie theater. I want to like all of my Justice League. And I liked all of them.
I feel like Bruce is the one I side-eyed the most, just because he makes terrible choices and there are no consequences.
Well, he does get beat up a lot in this movie.
I know, but that's like, I mean, that wasn't a... We just assumed that. But in terms of everybody else telling him that he has like a terrible idea and this is really dangerous, and then there being no consequences and everything works out. And well, I was just like, you know, when he that's said, how we're going.
When he said, let's bring Superman back, he's like trying to right a wrong. He's like, I made a mistake before. And even though people are saying like, this is a bad idea. Well, and you know, people were saying to him before that, going after Alfred was telling him that going after Superman in the first place was a bad idea, and he didn't listen. And he also didn't listen this time, but Cyborg did back him up. Cyborg was like, no, I think this would work. He's like, I don't know. And he's, I don't know. So he was, it wasn't like everyone, and Flash was basically just like, I don't want to be involved. Like, keep me out of this uncomfortable decision making.
Yeah, I guess. Is probably the most that and like one scene that was just really badly shot and constructed from filmmaker. The mirror scene, because I had no earthly idea one where exactly they were supposed to be at in the ocean, specifically what their relationship was.
Well,
until like I finally figured it out halfway through their conversation. But there was, like, no sense of that. And also, like, whether or not she was actually, like, what her place was in literally her own society. Like, there was no sense of, like, who she was, what was going on.
She seemed important.
She seemed important, but they never actually said. And then it was mostly just, like, weird exposition that, like, was
Well, you know, I'm sure you heard about this, but, like, you know that there's, like, 30 minutes worth of Aquaman stuff, including all of Willem Dafoe's parts.
I was are completely cut out of the cast. Movie. I was so confused. So, I mean, like, we're getting an Aquaman movie, so I'm sure we're going to find out. Like, hopefully it's going to be done much better. And I've heard that, like, they're actually going to speak without using air bubbles, which is going to be a way better, because I cannot imagine a largely silent Aquaman movie. Yeah. Which was another thing that was like, but yeah, that scene was just kind of off. And then like, and then a lot of Bruce's like choices and the way they're framed after the fact, it just kind of bugged me a little bit. But even then,
he made some good choices though. He was like, we got to bring Superman back. That was right. He was like,
all right, but you're saying that as a Superman fan. Yeah, because I want Superman
back. But he was also, he knew that the ultimate answer for what to do to
that's true
was not to and try to hit him with kryptonite. It was to get Lois involved. And yeah, it's like,
and I like the fact that he was he specifically says, it's because I was listening to you, I did that.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like, I know you thought I wasn't listening, but
I was, I promise. Yeah,
I kind of am into this, like I'm kind of into this, the version of this Ben Affleck DCEU Batman, the version of Batman that this universe posits in this movie. Like, I'm kind of into him, because he's It's a...
I mean, I am too, but I also think that he's written very unevenly, which is kind of a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's all over the place because this movie was, like, so much trying to, like, fix things.
Well, and then with BVS, it was also
I'm saying that's why I specifically am saying
Justice League, okay.
The one that this movie posits, because it kind of lets me rewrite, or not rewrite it, but it sort of lets me like look back at his other appearances through a little bit different lens.
I
can go like, all right, he's learned his lessons, and like it. I'll say this about this movie, and this is a thing that Batman vs Superman and Man of Steel totally did not do. This movie shows me versions of these characters, and like from what they do and what they say, it shows me versions of these characters where I feel like I can imagine things that happened with them to fill in some of those blanks in my own mind.
That's
not shown. It lets me go like, okay, I bet this is kind of, I feel like I have sort of like a feel enough. And also like that I want to try to understand these characters better. Whereas previously I'm going like, I can't even wrap my brain around why you would act like this. I don't care about wasting the mental energy to,
I think it did help too, that they actually developed like dynamics between the characters. And I really appreciated too, in the fight scenes, that they had a lot of like, for lack of a better word, like combos, in terms of like Aquaman took down someone, like one of the parademons that was going to gang up on Diana, then Diana immediately took her shield and protected him from rubble, and like it was basically
teamwork.
There was so much teamwork, and it was done really it was done in a way where like you can tell they're just like really competent fighters and know how to improvise. So it didn't feel like weird that they would know instinctually how to protect each other. And it also was just nice that there was a lot of give and take. And there was like, and I also genuinely really liked the scene between Flash and Cyborg, despite
in the graveyard.
That's the thing. It's like, the setting of it is awful, and it is like a
at least he mentions it.
Yeah, they do mention it. They lampshade it.
He's but this seems really bad, right?
But the bit where they're both kind of finding similarities between their origins was like the sweetest moment of the movie. It's genuinely like really sweet. Also, I love Cyborg was like one of my favorite things about this movie. I was actually really pleased with his performance, and I like the fact that he basically was one of the characters who actually had an arc. And I am really interested in seeing what a potential Cyborg movie would look like. It has problems because all of them, like, anything that relates to the plot, and Cyborg's like connected to the plot a lot, has problems. But
well, and they cut out a bunch of his, you know, more of a bunch too. More of his stuff.
But like what they kept in was actually a lot more than I was worried that they were going to give him like nothing to do. And they gave him a lot to do, and they gave him a lot of like, they gave him a lot of purpose in this movie. Again, it's not perfect, but I was very surprised, like pleasantly surprised what actually stayed in the movie for him. I'm generally actually pleased with it. I'm glad we were able to fill out the rest of the episode with this.
We could probably just turn this conversation into like its own little mini episode, but
and then like I said, if you want to do a larger episode about this at some point, we could totally do that, because we do have that we do have a little bit of a break coming up.
We're gonna have
up.
That Christmas break coming up.
Yeah, so we need to figure out how to fill that. I think that's all I got for.
Yeah, that seems good. So I'd say a pretty solid episode for the most part. Certainly not a bad one.
And next week is this week, but the next round of stuff for us is the crossover, which I've been excited for like all year, all season.
I'm pretty psyched for it. I'm excited to get to. I could have gotten ahead and gone ahead and started watching it, but I was like, I don't want to get these.
Yeah, let's
things,
keep
like,
our minds
mixed
clear
up in my brain. And, yeah,
yeah, that's the best way. And then that way, you're not tempted to be like, oh, but this does tie into the. Oh, yeah. I can't tell you about that yet.
Exactly.
Yeah, even though I did see some things on Twitter, so I know if a couple things that are going to show up.
I purposely avoided all of that stuff. I was like, if I saw anything.
I do know a few things, and I know some vaguely like frustrated because some people were vaguely frustrated with like a couple things too. But I think it should be a very fun. I don't know. I think we said we might split it up into two episodes just because it's like four.
Yeah,
four
it's
TV
a lot
episodes.
To try. It would be a lot to try to talk about in one episode, or it would just turn into like a super long episode. I think it'd probably be better for us if we split it into two separate conversations. But all right. So Katie, tell them all the places to find you and all the things that are in the show notes.
Yeah. So you can find me at Just Plain Tweets. Like I said before, I have a YouTube series that I do called Driving Home the Movie, and you can find that on YouTube. If you just go like Driving Home the Movie reviews or something, because I can't off the top of my head remember exactly what we have our YouTube channel called, which is probably a problem. No, you know, it's Just Plain Something. I also have I have a couple websites. I have katieschenkel.com and I have justplainsomebody.com where I occasionally post random blog stuff, and that's also where you can find the videos. You can tell I'm really tired because I'm getting all of these things out of order as I'm stating them. I have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/justplainsomething. Pre-orders for The Cardboard Kingdom, my graphic novel, continue to be up. They are, I think actually, Amazon now finally has pre-orders for the paperback as well as the hardback or the hardcover. So, if you have not pre-ordered yet and you want to get the paperback, it is like under $10 right now, the last time I checked. So it is a very good deal. I would highly recommend checking that out.
You can find me on Twitter at TheChrisHaley. You can follow the show on Twitter at KICTMPodcast. All of the show notes and links to all the stuff we're talking about and all the other shows are at KeepItCloseToMe.com. If you've got any emails or anything, comments, questions, any of that stuff you want to send us, you can do that at KeepItCloseToMePodcast@gmail.com. Just put Supergirl Gab in the subject line. I have a Patreon also. It is patreon.com/TheChrisHaley. And that has got early episodes of stuff like this show, behind the scenes stuff, art stuff, just all kinds of things. You can get stuff in the mail from me. Just got in a whole huge new batch of stickers that are going to be going out to people this week that I'm very excited about because I got a new place that is doing the sticker printing for me and they like turned out so well. Yay. I'm so excited. And so hopefully the people that are going to be getting these are going to be as excited about them as I am. And yeah, thank you everyone who tweets about the show, who retweets when we tweet about the new episodes coming out. All of that stuff is just so super cool of you guys, and we really appreciate it. And it all does make a difference. It's like we've said this before, but word of mouth is absolutely the best advertising. And to all of you amazing, super cool people that do that kind of thing and that listen to the show, we cannot thank you enough.
You're the best.
Absolutely. So I think that just about does it. And we'll see you next week on for more Supergirl Gab.
Bye, everybody. Was there a C plot? I don't even remember a C plot. Maybe I'm thinking of the A plot and the C plot. Oh, wait. Yeah, I remember now. It's all coming back to me.